This is the Epilogue Audio Experience.
Film is clearly a sophisticated art, possibly the most important art of the 20th century, with a rather complex history of theory and practice, writes James Monaco in his book, How to Read a Film. So far in our podcast, The Artists, we have had filmmakers, writers, critics, programmers, musicians, thinkers, defining their combinatorial skills. We at Metaphysical Lab have been striving to expand the realm of our podcast, which in turn gives a wider canvas to the understanding of our experiences. And also we have tied up with Epilogue Media, the podcasting network. So you can find us on their website, epiloguemedia.com/theartists. And of course, you can continue to listen to us on the platforms that you choose, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify to JioSaavn to Google Podcast. Everything is mentioned in the description. I'm your host Suchita, and I'm looking forward to a wonderful journey ahead with all of you. Are you getting acquainted with Web3, the next future that is already here? With 30 million plus users, Web3 is here to disrupt everything from content creation, storytelling, to banking, to e-commerce, you name it. We are rapidly moving towards the decentralized economy where power gets shifted in the hands of the creators and the consumers. You either adapt or die. Our guest for today is Umair Masoom Usmani, who is the founder and CEO of M-Content. Umair is a globally recognized marketing leader with almost 2 decades of cross-cultural business leadership experience. You can find him on all the social media sites, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, with the name Umair Masoom.
Hi, Umair. Welcome to our podcast, The Artist. And thank you for joining in. And thank you for being part of this conversation. And thank you for doing such a great work, specifically for the filmmaking community regarding your startup, M-Content.
Thank you. Thank you for the reach out. And I think I've been following up on your podcast. You've been doing an amazing job. And recently, you have covered a lot related to what's going on in the Web3 space, which impacts content. So, honored to be here, and hopefully I can add some, you know, interesting conversation for all your followers.
So, Umair, thanks. A lot of questions from the filmmaking community I'm going to ask you. But just basically to start off, Umair, tell me this. You are a pro at Web3, and we have been talking about Web1, Web2, and now Web3. If you had to just explain this to a layperson, sitting in some interiors of desert in Africa or in India, how would you explain the Web3 to them?
Okay, so basically, I think the greatest difference that people need to understand is that communication started back in the days, you know, and it started with one-way communication, right? Yes. Which means that only a broadcaster through a newspaper or through a TV channel or through a hoarding that you see on the road, they would be able to, you know, communicate a message or a content or a video asset to their viewers or their readers or the people who are driving on the road, right? So that was one-way communication. Is Web1, because that was where, there was only one-way communication, right?
Yes.
And then the web came in, which meant that now there is a two-way form of communication between individuals, right? So which means that the messaging that is going out, or any piece of content that is going out, any film that is being seen by its viewers, they have a methodology to give feedback, right? Yeah. They have methodologies. When you look at the content industry, I think what's really relevant is the video on demand factor, which now means that based on Web2, the viewer was actually able to define or decide what they wanted to watch, instead of having a linear broadcast where there was a fixed FPC or a fixed TV channel or a cinema where they would have to follow the timelines of the broadcaster, right?
Yeah.
But with Web2, they had the option to select. And again, this applies on, I'm giving an example of content, but this applies to every industry. With Web3, There is the element of an intermediary which has been eliminated, right? Because with Web 2, in every industry, there was an intermediary. Yes, there was two-way communication that was established, but there was always a channel in between, right?
Yeah.
When you look at broadcast and media, there was the film distributors or the OTT platforms, the Netflix or Amazon. Even if you go into advertising-based video on demand, there was a carrier, which is YouTube, right? So yes, communication is two-way, but there is an intermediary, and that intermediary has control, right? If you go back and if you look at the white paper of Bitcoin, I don't know if you've been able to read it actually. So the entire premise, when this individual came up with the idea of Bitcoin or the blockchain, which I call Web3, anything that is built around the blockchain, which is decentralized, is Web3, because there is no intermediary, right? How this applies to banking is that in banking, if there is a transaction that is happening between two individuals, there is an intermediary, right? Which is the party that settles the financial payment or the transaction, whereby they also have control, right? In case of the content industry, there is a lot of centralization because obviously the big studios, the distributors, the platforms, they have a lot of power because they are the intermediary, right? Whereas the product is being created by the content creator or the filmmaker, and the consumer is the guy who's sitting on his screen and watching, right? So the concept of intermediaries in every industry needs to be eliminated, and the power needs to go to the creator and to the viewer, right? That is Web3. That is what, for instance, Ripple or XRP were trying to do with the financial sector. And that is what we have been doing along with a few other significant players in the industry. That is exactly what we're trying to do with the content industry or the film industry, right?
Lovely. So, removing the power from the centralized party. Beautifully explained, Umair. Thanks for that. Now, when we're talking about the size, if you're talking about filmmakers, content, if you have to quantify this and say that, okay, the size of a football field multiplied by X number, do you think you'll be able to quantify the content industry right now?
Can't. I think the content industry right now is distributed into multifacets. You're talking about, a lot of the volume in the content industry that is with the streamers right now, because streaming is anticipated in the next 3 to 4 years to be a more than $15-20 billion industry, right? So streaming in itself is a huge market. Then cinema is a huge market, as you would know. And even when it comes to UGC, which is user generated content, or the digital creators, which is how typically all the AWOD platforms are surviving, like YouTube and all, or even in gaming when you go to a platform like Twitch. So that is obviously another market, and everything that is part of all of these ecosystems comes into the content industry, right? For us, our definition of what our scope is anything that a viewer consumes in an audiovisual manner within the 24-hour cycle is part of the content industry for us, right? And this is the content that they consume on social media, the content they consume on YouTube, the content they consume on Spotify, like your podcast, and the content they consume, on their OTT platforms, their subscriptions that they have. So everything is part of the content ecosystem for us. And we believe that the entire content space, including all of these areas, are centralized in one way or the other. There is always a central party which is controlling, and our vision is to be able to eliminate that.
Tell me, Umair, when you talk about M Content, you being the founder of M Content, and I was going through the white paper, and it's beautifully explained in terms of the problems and the problems that you're going to solve for the filmmakers, the independent filmmakers, also for the content creators. So If we have to explain it to a layman sitting in remote India or a remote part of the world, how would you explain M Content in a couple of sort of lines to them?
Okay, so M-Content is basically the ecosystem that is trying to decentralize this entire content space that we're talking about. And we have a very simple vision, which is that as a viewer, we want in the next 2 to 3 years that at least 80% of the content that you consume as viewers, you should be an owner into that content, right? And I know it sounds like a really crazy thought, but we've seen similar disruption in gaming already. I don't know if you know this, but play to earn is now the most popular form of gaming. If you told the biggest gaming companies in the world 5 years ago that their business is going to be taken away by a few companies that are going to come in and they're going to start incentivizing players to actually play, they wouldn't have believed us at that time, right? But now everyone understands how the human behavior is changing. We're talking about the Gen Z, which is a generation which is power centric, which is community centric. They don't do things just for the heck of doing them. They do things where they have the power to themselves. They want incentive against everything. They want involvement against everything. They want community in everything that they do, right? So their view of the world is completely different. And that is why the Web3 has been so successful till now in different facets, including gaming. And we feel the same thing is going to apply to the content industry sooner rather than later. And our vision is to enable that, right? So that is what M-Content is. But yes, what we've been doing, so we built an ecosystem which starts from decentralized funding of content creators and filmmakers. So we funded a lot of film and TV content till now, and also different content for digital creators that have reached out to us for the funding. We've created an entire funding space where we fund content in two categories. One is M Originals, which are the projects that our community believes in. These are intellectual properties and ideas and stories that our community wants to invest in, where the story is ours and we find the right creators to partner with, and then we produce this content, right? The second source of financing that we're doing is we allow creators to come to us and reach out to us with their ideas and their projects. And then we have the funding capability using the power of our community to either fund them through RCCF, which is our centralized content creation fund, which is a distributed mechanism, which means that it is all through voting. We have an upvote and downvote mechanism within our platform from the community. The community is able to vote on which content should be funded. So we fund seed content, which is mostly indie filmmakers and creators who do not have sufficient opportunities in their careers. So we're working with some of the best creators and filmmakers, and we're also working with new filmmakers and creators, giving them opportunities from a funding side, right? So we start with funding. After the funding, the second step that we do, especially for the independent filmmakers, is that we also help them in mentoring, right? So we have a mentorship program. You've recently seen in India, for instance, we've signed up with Anurag as our mentor for this market. And then, across the world, we have created a trusted group of mentors who then provide this mentorship and the curation for the content that is being created. So we help them through the journey, which is also part of our ecosystem. Then the third thing we do, which we are really proud of, and I think that is something that's really picked up, is that we have our own streaming platform, which is the world's first watch to earn platform, where we are incentivizing not just the creator for the views that are happening, but also the viewer, because we believe that the platform should not get anything within the ecosystem. The platform should just be a decentralized platform. So if there is a dollar value being generated within the streaming ecosystem, that entire dollar value needs to be redistributed between the creators and the viewers. Because the only two, in our opinion, the only two significant people within this transaction of content are the creator and the viewer, right?
Yeah.
The fact that the studios and the financiers and the platforms believe that they have the power is wrong, because the power only exists between two parties. One is the viewer and the second one is the creator or the filmmaker. Yeah. So that entire streaming system, how we are able to build watch to earn is because our philosophy is that everything that is being generated within that economy needs to go back to these two parties, right?
Who owns the IP?
So the IP is owned through our smart contract. The IP is actually owned by the viewer. But again, it depends. There are two models. So if you go to our platform right now, you will have two separate categories. The first section in the platform is of premium content, right? Which means that we have three or four categories of content in there, which is TV shows, films, short films, documentaries. And these are coming for three or four sources. You know, some are M Originals and M Seeds, which are funded by M Content. So obviously, in case of these products, the IP rests with the token holders, which is our community, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas we also have some acquired content, which means that the funds that we are generating in the CCF, which is our Content Creators Fund, we're also deploying some of that to acquire existing content, right? Licensing existing content so that there is enough to stream. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the main section where you get all the premium content. The second section that we have is user generated content, where now we have almost influencers and digital creators with more than 300 million YouTube subscribers who have all signed up and started creating their channel. Right. And then all our users are also creating their channels and they're publishing their videos, you know. Some are homegrown content, you know, all sorts of categories you'll see. Some are car lovers, some are passionate about food, some are passionate about travel. So that's just like a YouTube. That's just like a YouTube. The only difference being it's completely decentralized, which means the entire economy that is being generated on our mBrowse section, we call it the mBrowse. It's got now more than 30,000 videos, more than 3 terabytes of data. We have almost 165,000 daily active users, all from our global community of investors. So the entire economy that is being generated within mBrowse, we will soon, you'll see that we'll have advertising, including pre-roll ads and display ads. That entire ecosystem will fund back into the viewer and the creator, right? So if you look at YouTube charges almost 45% of what the creator earns right now through advertising. And then the viewer is not getting anything, right? So what we are doing is essentially we're giving everything back to the two parties. So that's our streaming ecosystem. The fourth thing then that we do is because some of the IPs that we're creating, some of the content that we're creating, as you said, you know, it's actually owned by the viewers. That's our model. It's owned by the token holders. So we also syndicate this content, right? So for example, we did the blockchain live series recently, you know, which was one of our first original projects. It was our idea. We started working with the European production house called Villain Studios. We built it up. It's a 7-episode series. It's been really, really successful because we've been able to feature almost all the big names within Web3, like Whitelake, who's the founder of Ethereum, like CZ, who's the CEO of Binance, the president of El Salvador, Nayib Bukele. Lots of big names are there. And it's become really powerful because all the stories that were our original ideas, actually, which we wanted to do a film about El Salvador versus World Bank. We wanted to do a film about Ripple versus SEC. So these two are already produced and they're increasingly becoming popular by day. So the other 5 episodes are all about really interesting topics like how Nigeria is being impacted by Web3 and crypto. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the mystery of the metaverse. We're talking about the NFT phenomena. We're talking about the role of women in Web3. So some really exciting episodes, right?
So the token holders are the viewers who come on the platform. And so how do you become a token holder?
So there are two ways to becoming a token holder. One is you download the platform and you start watching content and you will earn tokens against the consumption. Or if you're a content creator, you can start your own channel and you can start uploading content, and every view that you, from your very first view, you will start earning tokens. Remember that as a content creator on YouTube, if you open a channel on YouTube, it takes you around a certain number of subscribers and watch hours before you even start getting first monetization. Here your monetization is happening from your very first view that you generate. That's one way. The second
So the token holder is the person who is creating the content and the person who is viewing the content. Both of them are token holders.
Both are token holders. And The third token holder is also the person who is investing directly into the token, because remember, this is a tradable community. So it's being traded almost 10 exchanges now, including one of the top five exchanges, which is Huobi Global. Hopefully we'll get to other bigger exchanges as well.
Yeah.
So there are three ways to own the token. Either you're a creator or a filmmaker who uploads the content on the platform, or by being a viewer who consumes content on the platform, or by going and buying the token. Because if you feel that this circular economy is going to grow over a period of time, if you believe in the idea, then you can also go and buy, right?
Yeah.
So there are three ways to becoming a token. Just to conclude what I was saying, so people ask me, so how's the benefit of the syndication for the token holder? So we have an earn and burn mechanism. You might have read the white paper, which means that 50% of all revenues generated through this content and through the platform is reinvested into the token, because we use that money to buy our own token and burn it, right? Because it's a deflationary token. So the supply keeps reducing, the demand keeps increasing, and the supply keeps reducing, which means that the price is essentially going to go up, which is the real benefit for the token holders, right? So other than them being part of the circular economy, they also get the appreciation benefit. So that is the fourth part of our business. And the last part is the Cineverse. So we launched in February, we launched the M Content Cineverse, which is the world's, which was the world's first Web3 cinema. We worked with PwC Global, which is PricewaterhouseCoopers, you know, it's a global firm. They were our tech partners who built this immersive experience. And since then, we've been able to sell this experience at some crazy locations like a beach. So we invited 300 people to attend a movie premiere at a beach. They were sitting at a beach, but they were actually feeling that they're in a cinema. We've done it at schools, colleges. We've done it at some of the film schools here in Dubai, just to showcase how it's being done. We've done it with some consumer banking firms. There's a digital bank here that has done it for its customers. We've we've done the Cineverse showcase at some NGOs as well, because there are people who don't have the opportunity of going into a cinema because of their limitations that they have. So we've taken it to certain centers where people with physical challenges are there. And it's a phenomenal, I think, experience. And it's a phenomenal experiment, because the more we look into the application of the Cineverse and how we can actually sell the ticketing to a cinema through NFTs, we increasingly realize that cinema doesn't really need to be at cinema. Cinema can be anywhere, right? Because cinema is not the physical location. The cinema is actually an experience, and that experience can be created anywhere you want with the people that you want to attend cinema with. And that's our concept for the cinema. So that's the five areas that we have as an ecosystem, starting from funding to curation to streaming to syndicating and licensing or trading content. And the last is the Web3 cinema. So that's what I'm going to
say. Awesome. Umed, that's like whole white paper. You condensed it and explained it. Brilliant. Umed, tell me this. The problem with filmmakers is multiple and challenging problems. And of course, you've mentioned this in the white paper, saying that 95% of filmmakers, they get into another profession. They never pursue filmmaking because the fundings are not there. And 99% of content creators, they never get their money. They're not able to monetize. And 99% are not getting to cinema screenings. The main core problem of filmmakers and also the content creators when it comes to monetizing content. These three, of course, are the main challenging problems, but there is another huge problem. Who is the audience? And how do you get the audience to come and watch your content? So when I'm talking about like one of the earlier podcasts, it was like 70,000 films get made every year. 70,000 is a figure that was thrown at me. And what we see is only the content that goes on Netflix or Hulu or, you know, Tubi or Mubi, and the rest of the content, what happens to them? How do they get channelized? How do they just disappear into the air? So how is M Content addressing the problem of taking your content to the right viewers, rather attracting the viewers to your content or your films?
See, I'll tell you, this is exactly what you've said is the largest and the biggest problem, because this is directly related to centralization. Because what we've done as an industry is we've gone and given power to platforms, right? Whereas what we needed to do was to give power to the viewers. Because now, try and understand this, that, and I've asked this question, you know, recently I was at a content funding festival in London. You know, some of the biggest indie producers in UK were attending, you know, and in my panel, I actually asked them, you know, what's the most important aspect or the most important party in the success of any piece of content, you know, whether it is digital content, creator-driven content, or film and TV content. What's the most powerful, you know, entity within the entire content space? What do you think? You know, I'll ask you.
The most powerful entity, I would say, is definitely the viewers, you know, who's consuming the content.
Yes, so you're very good because you gave the answer the first time. But in that hall that I was sitting in, there were lots of people, and no one gave the correct answer the first time because, you know, people feel in our content industry, and all filmmakers feel, that the power is with platforms like Netflix or Amazon, or with the large studios, or with the large Hollywood and Bollywood families. Some people think that it's with the large directors, because if you get the right director, you're going to have a hit, you're going to have success. Some people feel it's the writer. If you get the powerful writer, it's going to, some people feel it's the faces, it's the actor, the hero, or the actress, you know, if they're popular. But no, it's all in the hands of the viewer. So philosophically, my belief is, and I've tested it on a very small population of 165,000 people that we have on our platform, is that the viewer, the model in which we engage the viewer right now, is non-captive, because the viewer does not have an interest beyond the quality of the content and the availability of the content. So he's only going to watch what he knows is good and is available to him, because the model is disjointed. The viewer, who's the most important party in the entire content space, gets nothing in the content business. Now imagine this, that the viewer has a stake in the content, right? The viewer is getting incentivized to watch content, right?
Yeah.
Now the viewer is actually going to go out, because what he wants to do is watch content, right?
Yes.
Now he wants to watch content because he's a stakeholder in the content, right? So now he's going to go out and look for the right content, because he's also going to be a decision maker. In the future, the content gets produced, he's also going to be a decision maker in that, right?
Yeah.
So he will go out of the way to search, find the right content, invest in the right content, and watch the right content. And we've seen this. If you go to our platform right now, it's so crazy. Some of the videos on mBrowse, the comments that you'll see is, "Hey, bro, I watched your video. Can you go and watch mine now?" Right? Or there is like, "So I've been subscribing to your channel. Can you go and subscribe mine?" So people are actually exchanging content, right? So when you decentralize, content actually becomes a medium of exchange. Right now, it's only a medium of entertainment or news or infotainment or knowledge. Why can't we make also content a medium of exchange, an exchange of value between individuals, right? And then you'll see how it's going to work. Because now, as a filmmaker who has produced something which does not have an audience, you have the option now to directly reach out to your viewer and bring them to your content, because the viewer is getting a direct incentive. It's your own circular economy. As a filmmaker, if you come and launch your film on the M Content platform, and again, this is my shout out to everyone in the film space who has ever produced a film which has been unsuccessful. It's possible that your success of the film was not because of the quality of your content. Maybe the fact that it was unsuccessful was because of the centralization of the system. So I offer you now, come and launch your film on our platform, create your own independent circular economy where people will get benefit, and you will also get benefit against the views that are generated, and you promote it yourself because it's your own circular economy. Right? So by decentralizing content, the entire issue of you not being able to attract the right viewer is going to be addressed, both on the streaming platform, even on the film side, because you can sell your own NFTs. Even if you have just 100 people in your circle that are willing to come and watch your film in cinema, we can make sure that those 100 people are invited to our Cineverse and they can come and watch the movie, you know? So your film will still be screened even with 100 people who want to watch your film in cinema, and your film will still be successful on the streaming platform, even without you being on one of the top platforms of the world, because you're decentralizing and you're creating your own circular economy.
do you think that MContent is going to like go invest or perhaps go out of the way to attract viewers from say different parts of the world to be part of the network? Are you guys doing that as well?
We are. So see, we started with, I know our initial focus was in some of the markets where there is early adoption of crypto. So we started with a lot of content and productions that we did in the US market, for example, in the South American market. Yeah. We've had a lot of focus in EU for that matter, because we feel that those are the markets that are early adopters as far as crypto is concerned. And at the end of the day, our economy that we've created is centered around more early adopters, because the more early adopters come in, the more people start using our platform, start trading our cryptocurrency. The higher volumes of trading that happens on our cryptocurrency, the bigger this ecosystem becomes, right? So for us, naturally, our focus initially was to focus on the markets where we felt that we can have immediate success on the Web3 side, right? But having said that, now we're expanding into all sorts of different markets. India is a market that we recently started an outreach program in. You know, we launched a campaign with Anurag Kashyap, which became really popular. And again, there's some follow-up to that campaign that you'll see this weekend. We are now going into the Egyptian market because, again, it's a huge content market. We are going into Nigeria really aggressively. We've already done one production in Nigeria through a seed applicant, but now we're going into a proper mentorship program, reaching out to filmmakers so that they can come and apply. And there are a few other Asian markets as well that we want to tap into. So that's how we are expanding. Yes, we want to still focus on those big ticket items that attract the Web3 followers and the Web3 creators, because you'll see in our content, the content that we funded till now, almost 40 to 50% is related to Web3. And the reason why we do it is because we feel that these are the people, these are the audiences that we can tap into early. And then we expand from there, right? Because these people are already in the Web3 space and they already understand Web3 gaming. So for them, it's easier to understand Web3 content. So yes, that's where we are. But yes, to answer your question, we are expanding into different markets and we are hiring top talent and top influencers and successful filmmakers in different markets, partnering up with them so that we can have this outreach.
Do you have any, can you quantify this market in terms of the viewership? Do you think it's possible to quantify it? That, okay, these are the viewership, the number that we're expecting from different countries. This is where we aim to hit in the next couple of years.
See, I mean, like, we don't have numbers from that perspective to be specific by market. But I think there is, you know, an easy market of 30 to 40 million people globally, which are already deeply penetrated into the Web3 space, right? And for us, this is the first segment to attract, because these are people who are already trading in cryptocurrency.
30 to 40 million, are trading in crypto already in the Web3 space, you're saying. So that's the market currently.
That's the immediate market, because these are people who will in any case find out about MContent because it's in their space, right? And they will start using the platform. They'll start consuming content on the platform. They'll start, viewing all of their preferred content also on our platform. They'll start moving their creator friends to our platform. So if you're a Web3 enthusiast, you find out about this platform, which has watch to earn, which has decentralized a marketplace. So you're gonna, and if you know a creator, let's say who has 100,000 followers, who lives next door to you, you will definitely tell that influencer to come and upload his content on the platform, right? And how you grow organically, that's how we've been growing till now. The 165,000 active users that we have is driven by people like these. But now we are expanding into a more aggressive program where we are going out even beyond the Web3 space, right? So for example, the campaign that we've started with Anurag, it's not going to be specific to the people who are into Web3. We're going to invite anyone and everyone to come and join the platform, right?
So Umair, just to extend that a bit. So 30 to 40 million right are immediate. Where do you see that going in the next 5 years? That's where you're hitting. In the next 5 years, Web3 space?
Yeah, I think in the next 5 years, the content and Web3 players are going to overtake the entire content industry. That's how I look at it. Mm. And And see, I'll tell you, it's slightly philosophical, but I'll tell you, when we started, like, I don't know when TV started, I think maybe in the 40s or 30s, right? So TV was a mechanism where you would broadcast content to viewers without them being able to select what they want to watch at one point in time, right? They would just have to follow a guideline or a fixed point chart, right?
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, there was this disruption happened where the viewer had a role in selecting what they wanted to watch at what time, right?
Yeah.
Which is video on demand, right? And the reason why all of these streaming platforms are successful is video on demand, right? So giving the viewer an opportunity to request what they want to watch. That was the disruption. It was a very simple disruption, but in 10 years, the traditional players are almost, in my books, they're almost out of business, right?
Yeah.
And now this new disruption is happening. Yeah. Where now the viewer can not only decide what they want to watch, but they can also decide what is going to be produced.
Yeah.
They can also decide what is going to be streamed. They can also decide what is going to be distributed.
Yeah.
And how is it going to be distributed?
Yeah, which is like a total and complete disruption of the traditional model. Then and now and the next coming of. So Umair, so are you seeing a huge disruption in the way the streaming platforms will work in the way, you know, because they are the one who are actually controlling. Everything gets controlled by these 7-8 main streaming platforms. So do you think they need to have a different outlook when when we're talking about Web3?
Of course. See, I'm sure they are watching interviews like these. I'm sure there are a few people in the Web3 space that are talking content globally since the past 1 year, including us. And I'm sure if they're smart business people, they're already listening to us, right? Probably they're listening to your podcast right now. And they are tying in the numbers because the numbers for them are declining. Everyone knows that the subscribers are declining, right? For every subscription base, for every SVOD platform right now in the world, the subscribers are declining.
Yeah.
And for every platform that is related to gaming and Web3, the users are increasing. The users are increasing, right?
Yeah.
Now, whether you talk about Twitch and the likes, you know, the users are increasing, right?
Yeah.
So what's my conclusion? The conclusion is that Gen Z is not going to consume content the traditional way. They will not consume something until you create power for them and until you create monetization for them, right?
Yeah.
And you involve them, until you give them a community feel. And this Gen Z right now, yes, because these are people like up to the age of 23, 24, perhaps.
Yeah.
Right now, they may not be as important to you,
but
as a streamer, as a global streamer. But five years from now, they will be the most important people, right? Which means that by the time their behavior and their characteristics are going to evolve and become much more stronger, they would have more ground. So if they are smart enough, they're actually looking at the Web3 space now, and they are looking at disruption, and they should be flexible and they should try and change.
Because
their model is, in my opinion, it's not going to exist in the next 5 to 10 years.
And Umair, how does that impact a filmmaker who's trying to make a film, like an independent film, telling their point of view, getting their story? Do you think that they need to also sort of look into their filmmaking as something that they're telling it for the specific viewers? Do you think that we need to modify our filmmaking perspective or the stories that we are telling or putting out there?
See, I think, and this applied before as well, right?
Yeah.
But now increasingly more than ever, the story that you are developing, you have to make sure that you're creating them for the audience, not for you. Make sure that, you know, if you're working on a story, it's not something that you resonate with or someone you have loved resonates with. It shouldn't be something that your employer resonates with. It shouldn't be something that, you know, someone sitting at Netflix or Amazon told you that they would be interested in doing this story. No. And, you know, you should only research the audience, define your core audience, and work on products that are going to attract those audiences, because the way this the industry is evolving now, they need to be even more sure of the fact that they need to produce content and create content and stories for the viewer by researching them and trying to find out what the viewer wants, right? And everything else within the landscape should be insignificant. The only significant player is the viewer. So create content that is going to tap into the right audiences, and that's going to be most important in the next few years.
Yeah, Umair, but there is a hitch there. And what you said is absolutely precise in terms of creating the content for the viewers. But when we talk about independent filmmaking, it comes from something that independent filmmakers want to put out there, which is not related to viewers. I don't think any filmmaker out there thinks about what is going to be my viewership or the viewer. I think that's one of the reasons why maximum content doesn't see the light of the day, because, you know, because they have a personal story to tell. And personal stories, as we are seeing, I don't know if it's sad or if it's good, you know, it's not something that's getting bought. And even markets like Cannes and Berlin are moving towards a more commercial aspect of filmmaking than a personal storytelling. What do you have to say to that? You know, what advice you give there?
See, I think that aspect can be covered through the power of community, right? Because in the Web3, every storyteller has the option of creating his own community, his or her own community, right? Yeah. So you still work on the story that you want to do as an independent filmmaker if that story is close to your heart. Yeah. But first, build a community around it. Before creating that story, first build a community around that story, right? So for example, when I entered the Web3 space, a year and a half ago, you know, how I started was I built a community. I had an idea, which was very vague. I started talking on different chats and Twitter spaces and Telegram, and I started collecting like-minded people from across the world who believed in my story, right? M content is my initiative within the Web3 space, right? Yeah. Which is all centered around a community that believed in my story. I was able to build a company out of it, right? Yeah. As a filmmaker, you can follow the same process. You can start building a community that resonates with your story. Once that community is there, you can build your film around it, you know? I built a company around my story. You can build a film around your story. It's as simple as that. But yes, community first, always community. The Web3 is always about building a community first. Yeah. And then building the product.
Yeah.
Whereas Web2 was always about building a product and then finding the audience or finding the user or the consumer, right? Whereas Web3 is about first finding the user and the consumer and the community and then building a product. So
beautiful. That's beautiful. I mean, that like sorts it out. That's the bottom line. Like, build your community first and then go around building your product, which is like your storytelling or whatever you are aiming to do, your content creation. So community is what we're heading towards. And that community is going to help us monetize our content once they get connected to the kind of stories that we are trying to tell.
Yes, for sure. And even film festivals. I know a lot of indies, they do content just to win an award in film festivals, which is great, I know. But even film festivals, I mean, like, I can't share a lot with you, but right now we're working with one of the top global metaverse projects, and there is something vague that we're cooking at this point in time, but even the film festivals tomorrow will not happen in the physical spaces. You know, even the film festivals are going to happen in the metaverse.
The metaverse, yeah.
So there's a major
disruption happening. Totally. We're going to get into another dimension of the world with Web3. Yeah. Not hopefully, what we are following. Yes. Any parting words, Umair? Last words to our community listening to the podcast?
I think the most important thing I would say is that you should always, you know, when you truly really believe in an idea, and this could apply to a story. I mean, like, yeah. I take this example from my own life, whereby, you know, I believed in two or three business ideas. By the way, this is the third business that I started, and finally it became successful. But I kept believing in my ideas, right? So just my message, because I know there will be a lot of filmmakers watching. So if you have a story or an idea that you really believe in, then don't let anything else shatter that dream or that belief of yours, because at the end of the day, it's self-belief, right, is the most important thing that is going to define your success. And yes, maybe one of your films might not be appreciated by a group, but there will always be that success that comes your way on the second attempt or the third attempt or the 10th attempt. So keep believing in your ideas and your stories, and hopefully the Web3 is going to help you achieve your dreams.
Wow, wonderful. That's wonderful, Umair. Thank you so much. Believe in your ideas and go check out M Content and see how filmmakers can collaborate there as well. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for having me. Bye.
So guys, do check out the M Content app. You can go and download it and see how you feel about the whole thing. I'm gonna do that too. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to follow us for regular updates on the podcast. Metaphysical Lab handle that you can find on LinkedIn, on Twitter, and on Instagram.